What follows is for news and entertainment purposes only. Any use of the forthcoming information in violation of any federal, state, or local law is prohibited.
Mike North, you are on fire.
You know anybody else that good?
No.
No, they'll tell you they are. They may think they are, but we're documented every single week. The eye is on us.
That's
and I ain't talking about the eye of CBS, the public eye. The first feeling I got when I won a bet was elation. The worst feeling was when I lost a bet and I wanted to jump off a balcony.
Give me a quick betting tip.
Yeah, do win and don't lose, but usually it doesn't always work out that way. How many times you heard this? I'm going to Vegas. I go, how'd you do? Well, guess I lost $4,000, but you know, you go there to have fun. No, you go there to win. And that's what's wrong with people. They have the negative mentality in anything they do, including sports, before you even laid the bet down. So you gotta be positive. Vegas Scores and Odds is the landing place that gave me an opportunity to handicap. They let me show what I could do. And there's packages, there's free picks. What does Vegas Scores and Odds do when you perform? They reward you and they take care of you. And that's why we're ready to do this show.
The Vegas Scores and Odds Advantage with Mike North starts right now. That's right, Vegas Scores and Odds Advantage with Mike North starts right now. I am Aldo Gandia, Mike's wingman, and it is another very special moment in Bears Barroom Radio Network history. That's because Mike has a very special guest with him. And you know what? It's only appropriate that Mike introduces him, but let me introduce Mike. Mike North, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Aldo. Now, we will have plenty to talk about. I know the chat board will have some questions. I know you'll have some questions for our next guest at the end of the interview. But I got to just tell everybody, I've known this guy for since like the early 90s. I remember him and Dan Marino and myself and a few others at the National Italian American Sports Hall of Fame. I thought he was going to be in the Hall of Fame as an automatic. But you know what? I heard Don Baker say from the Hall of Fame that there have been so many guys that have been overlooked over the past decades, over from the all decades team. And Jimbo from the 1980s decade team was the only guy left off. Well, now they have a new deal because of the 100th anniversary of the National Football League. And instead of bringing in just the allotted eight each year, they've added up to 20, and they're going to bring in players that were from 25 years ago or longer, players that were 10 to 15 years ago that were overlooked. And I believe he's finally going to get what he justly deserves. We're pleased to have on with us, getting ready, hopefully, to be a Hall of Famer, Jimbo Colbert. Hello, Jimbo.
Hey, Mike, how are you? How are you, Aldo?
I am great. Awesome.
Yeah, we're great, Jimbo. And you know what? First of all, I got to ask you, I mean, you know what? I thought you got so unfairly overlooked like some others have in the past. And I think this is a godsend, this 100th anniversary, because it basically, I think, gives the National Football League, gives the writers, and gives everybody a chance to correct what some people have perceived as maybe things that were wrong, such as Kenny Stabler, other players, and yourself.
Yeah, I think that they're doing a great thing. And, you know, this centennial class and the 100th year anniversary of the league in 2020, I think, is a great thing to do. And, you know, there's so many guys that have fallen through the cracks and are in the senior pool, dozens and dozens of guys. I think the list they started when they started getting down to the finalists of 20 were like 300 guys. So it just tells you how many guys have fallen through the cracks and just got overlooked. And they're really going to pay homage to the history of the NFL, and rightly so. So I think you're going to see, you know, some guys in there from the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, and they should be, because they should be recognized. So it'll be a lot of fun, and, you know, who knows what's going to happen. I think it's the best shot I've ever had. I got a 50-50 shot at it, so I'm hoping good things will happen.
You had some guys politicking for you? Is there a lot of politics being played out there? Like maybe some of your guys, like Richard Dent, Dan Marino, who you blocked for and roomed with back at Pitt. Is there a lot of politicking going on, or is most of that stuff gone and it's just some fun times? You're playing golf, relaxing, doing what you got to do.
Well, I don't think it's politics, and I just think that, you know, you got guys that you played with, played against, and teammates with that, you know, want to say some good things about you, and they talk to the writers and the people on the Blue Ribbon panel. So, you know, Dan has done that and mm-hmm. other of my teammates and other people. And I think that's been a real help. And, you know, you're just going to kind of have to wait and see. I really do believe it's going to be tight because although there's 20 going to 10, you know, there's going to be a lot of the older guys that have been overlooked for so many years, and they're going to try to make sure that those guys get their, you know, their audience in the room, and they're rightly so, they should be. So, you know, I'm just hoping at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, that I'm one of the 10, and I'm hoping that's going to happen. And I know Dan Pompey has done a phenomenal job, you know, putting together the presentation, and I've talked to him several times, and he seems to feel confident. But, you know, when you get in that room, you know, all bets are off. So, you know, we'll see what happens.
You know, I remember talking and debating with Dan about this and saying that I didn't think certain Bear writers, not Dan at the time, Dan Pompey is one of the good guys, and he's a guy that pushes for all the Bears. But I said to him, I didn't think that maybe you were pushed enough at the beginning. Maybe you didn't get the backing. He didn't necessarily disagree at the time. He didn't necessarily agree. But it's good to hear you got a powerful guy in Dan Pompey that's with you on that, because Danny's got a lot of influence. I would ask you this. Bill Parcells, I read some quotes from Bill Parcells, and he said that getting ready for the Bears, the toughest tackle that the Giants ever played against in the NFC was Jimbo Covert. Now, he left the AFC open because of the constant Anthony Munoz love, which I'm sure is deserved. But first of all, how does that make you feel? Second, Lawrence Taylor never had a sack against you. I think he played three games against you. And if you can, Jimbo, after those two questions, tell me if there is that rivalry between you and Munoz.
I don't think there's a rivalry between, you know, Anthony and I. I mean, I know that Anthony has come out several times and said that, you know, he watched me on film and he thought I was a great tackle and felt like I, you know, was every bit as good as Gary Zimmerman, and other guys are in the Hall of Fame as well. So, and, you know, I watched Anthony as well on film because we're contemporaries, and I mm-hmm. saw the things that he did, and I learned a lot from him pass blocking. And I think, you know, maybe he learned a lot from me the way we used to run the football. And, you know, mm-hmm. we led the league in rushing 4 years in a row. And I think Cincinnati only won it, you know, won the rushing title once while he was there. So I think we had a great line, and we just kind of got overlooked. And I think, unfortunately, like, there were years where the Bears just weren't very good, and they thought it was all Walter Payton. And, you know, I like to think our line, when I came in 83 and we led the league in rushing, you know, we were 18th in the league in rushing in 82, and we went to number one after my rookie year, and then we stayed there for 4 years. And I think we finished number two twice and number three once. So that's a pretty good record. But I think there's just a perception that from a lot Walter did it all on his own, and, you know, because of the prior lines that they had. And I don't think that's a fair statement either, but it was out there and people think that way, unfortunately.
Well, you know, what's basic about that is, though, I remember when Walter led the league in rushing, Noah Jackson, CV, I remember Pfeiffer. I remember that line. He led in 1977 the league in rushing. The line was okay. They called him the Cosmic Rays, but I think that's true, that maybe the offensive line of the Bears was overshadowed until you saw the offensive line, you know, do the job. They always, how many of Walter's runs were to your side on a percentage basis, would you figure?
Oh, I don't know. I'd probably say at least 70% of the running plays we ran on to the left side because we became a left-handed football team. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think it was because of the way, that, you know, I ran, you know, with run block, and then, you know, Noah and then with Mark Bortz and I together, sure. Mark was a hell of a run blocker as well. So I just think we ended up being a left-handed football team, and Walter liked to run to the left, and so did Matt. And, you know, we just developed into that, and it was a short side game too, because, you know, I didn't have a tight end very many times too. So weak side runs, and that's a lot of fun when you can blow people off the ball and get some yardage. So we had a lot of fun doing that.
So basically, let's say Walter was here. I would imagine Walter would be one of the main guys campaigning for you if he was still around. What was it like to play with him? And was it constant, like, joking around? Because they make it sound like, you know, those training camps were brutal, and they were brutal compared to the way they are now. But there was a lot of fun and a lot of camaraderie with that team also, wasn't there?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. It was a lot of fun. And, camaraderie. And Walter was, you know, he's a prankster, but he was a very competitive person, had a great personality. And, you know, I think when you know, in 85 and even a little bit before that, maybe then when the team started to perform and get great players through the draft and everything, he might have got a little, he thinks, I mean, maybe a little bit overshadowed. But mm-hmm. he was really the glue that kind of held our whole team together. And he always was and always will be. So if it wasn't for him, I don't think we'd go to the Super Bowl in 85. And even though we had a great team, it held everything together.
You know, who was the toughest for you? Who was the guy that you said, if I really want to consider myself a Hall of Fame, I don't need to see this guy going up against me too much? Because you seemed, I went to every game you were, almost every home game, and I saw every game you played, and I very rarely ever saw you get beat. Was there a guy that you said, I don't really want to play this guy, but hey, what are you going to do? Was there one guy that really was dominant over the other guys you played against?
Yeah, I'd say Leroy Selman was the best guy I played against. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I played against some pretty good guys. I mean, Richard Dent, I mean, I played against him every day in practice. And, mm-hmm. I mean, I think he's probably the best, if not the best, you know, one of the best guys I played against. But, you know, it's hard in practice because you're not, you know, it's not like, you know, mm-hmm. chips are on the line in the game. But Leroy Selman, I think, was the best by far of any defensive end that I played against. And I played against some good ones. And I think he was the best.
Your family, Penny, everybody else, I think that there's got to be a lot of nervousness right now because, like you said, I know this, nothing's guaranteed. So how's your stomach? How's it been churning? How's the family?
Well, everybody's doing great. It's just, you know, a little bit of a nerve-wracking time, and I don't think we're even going to know after today because I think they're going to wait until and announce at a later date, you know, down the road, maybe a week later. So it'll be another week of nail biting after that too. So I'm hoping I hear something, but I don't think we're going to hear until they announce it on television and then maybe bring some guys and so we'll see.
You know, you brought up something that's interesting. Practicing against your own, Richard Dent, Steve McMichael, Dan Hampton. As an offensive line, you went up against a great defensive line, Mike Hartenstein, William Refrigerator Perry. When you went up against other teams, even on game day, and you said it was just practice with your guys, how much tougher or how much easier? What did it make it easier that you went up against studs like Dent and Hampton?
Oh, I mean, the games were a lot easier than practice. I mean, our practices were hard, and we went live, and we were full pads, you know, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. A lot of teams didn't do that. In training camp, you know, we opened up training camp with Nutcracker. That's how we opened it, every training camp for the first 3 days.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it was me against Dent, me against Hampton. I mean, that's what they did. And so, you know, times have changed a lot, but it made you such a more competitive player and realizing that, you know, got there on Sunday, and a lot of times you aren't going to face anybody better than what you faced in practice. So, and it helped our defensive line as well.
I was listening to Golic and Winkle this morning on ESPN, and Mike Golic Jr. brought up the fact that he thought the best athletes on the field, and I know he was an offensive lineman at Notre Dame and stuff, were offensive linemen. And Dan Jenkins used to tell me the same thing. And I said, well, now's a good opportunity. I'll have one of the best who ever did it at the left tackle position answer that. But, you know, when you're talking about offensive linemen, his father, Mike Golic Sr., said, well, I was a defenseman, and I know I tried hard, but I was a little bit chubby and this and that. Where would you put offensive linemen as athletes?
I don't know if I'd put offensive linemen as one of the best athletes on the field.
I thought so too, but I had to get the answer from you.
Yeah, I think we're pretty good athletes. I wouldn't say that we're the best athletes. I think some of the best athletes on the field, in my opinion, are the defensive backs. Mm-hmm. I think they're the best athletes on the field. I think the, you know, the rush guys, some of the defensive ends, but you know what? I was able to do things a little bit differently because I tried to power guys, and I felt like if you could really kind of dominate a guy physically in the run game, I think it made it a lot easier on the passing game because it just, you beat them up so much that they kind of didn't run. They didn't have the ability because, you know, you got to play four quarters and you got to play hard. And so I think that was the way I tried to approach it because those guys, you know, when they're lining up 6 yards wide and they're in a sprinter stance and it's 3rd and 12 and they're getting to the quarterback, I mean, they're pretty good. especially on turf. So you better have good feet and get, get a good pass set and get on guys like that. So I tried to beat them up in the run game so they didn't feel like they could go out there and rush wide and get to the quarterback.
What was your secret on Lawrence Taylor that other guys didn't know? Now, I know you only played three games. It wasn't like you were the Redskins or that you were the Cowboys and that you were in that division. But when you did play him, you did dominate. You didn't hear his name. I saw the games. What was your secret now that you look back? Did you let him make the first move? Did you just basically not change too much and just try to be your fundamentally tough self? What was the deal, Jimbo?
You know what? Mike, I just think that I matched up well with him physically. And I just felt like, for some reason I was able to play really well against him. And then they always tried to make sure that I was the guy blocking him 95% of the time. And when you're blocking a guy that many times in a game, you get a good feel for him and what he's trying to do. And if you remember, in a lot of those games, we weren't in really bad situations either. The only game that we were in bad situations, like third and long a lot of times, was in the 90 playoff game. And I don't even think he had a pressure in that game because I had a good pass blocking game. We didn't play particularly well as a team. I just think I matched up physically with him. And we ran the ball, tried to run right at him and isolate him and have me block him. But, I mean, in my opinion, I think he's the greatest defensive player in the history of the league. If I played against him three times and shut him out and played very well against him, I would think that has to count for something.
You know what? McMahon's injuries. I know we win more than one Super Bowl if he's healthy. He played the way he played. He played reckless and whatever. So we know that whole story. Do you sort of look back? I think some of the Bears do now. I know that there was some selfishness on that team, but not from any particular, a few people. But when you look at the Flutie situation, Tom Thayer and I have talked about this before. Hampton didn't like him. The tough situation of Flutie being at the dinner. But going with Mike Tomczyk, now that I look back and I've seen Flutie's career, and I thought he was very good in the National Football League. For a man his size and a groundbreaker, do you think if maybe things were different? Maybe if the team would have been more welcoming, maybe if Flutie wouldn't have been known as the pet, maybe if some of the players, including Jimmy, and who I love, Jim McMahon, and prepping for Tomczyk, do you think things might have been different?
You know what, Mike? I don't know about that. I mean, I just think Doug, his what he did well,
yeah,
we didn't do, right? So we were a drop back passing attack. Right. And we didn't roll out a lot. We didn't have a lot of moving pocket. We did, but not that much.
Sure.
And that's what you would have to do with Doug. You'd have to moving pocket. You'd have to, waggle him left, roll out right, do all kinds of stuff to keep him moving because, he couldn't sit in the pocket because he just wasn't big enough or tall enough to see over people. So if you remember that first Washington game, I mean, he was throwing it up for passes. It looked like, when you were playing street football and you would yell punt, you couldn't punt it. You have to throw it. Right?
Yeah.
Right. And you throw it way up in the air. It was the same. That's what they look like. And I'm not blaming Doug for that. I just don't think he had this. Yeah. That wasn't his forte. Right. Mm-hmm. So we would have had to have a completely different, offense if he was going to stick around. My biggest thing, I'm a big Jim McMahon fan.
Sure. I am too.
I just thought he was the best and the smartest guy I ever played with. And I just feel like if we would have just kept him healthier, but you're right. I mean, he was the kind of guy if you look at Montana back in those 80s, when he would feel a pass rush on him, he didn't scramble a lot.
No.
If he felt like he could scramble and maybe dump it off, he did. He'd just fall down, live to fight another day, right? I mean, why not? Live to fight another day. Like, get sacked, fall down, let the guys fall on you, tag you, who cares? But no, I can get out. Mac was like, I can beat this guy to the corner. I can do that. And that's when he got hurt. But that's what made it great. So, I mean, I don't say anything bad about that. I just wish he would have stayed healthier and we could have kept him healthier.
I'll tell you what, the offensive line that you guys had, when I got to know, I've never seen a huger group. I mean, Keith Van Horn, my God. I mean, Mark Bortz, yourself. Jay was the midget of the group, for God's sake. I have never, I mean, seriously, as you look at offensive lines, I think the thing that I noticed about this line, that line back in the 80s, which you didn't see a whole lot of, was the height of the offensive linemen. I mean, what did what Van Horn went by, like 6'7"? I think Bortsy was like 6'7". Yeah, Bortsy was like 6'3". You're what, about 6'4"?
Oh, shoot, Bortsy's like 6'6".
Yeah, and you, what are you?
I'm like 6'4". And
the biggest offensive.
6'4", yeah.
The tallest offensive line I've ever seen. My God. And did that help you guys?
I think so. And, you know, that's an unfortunate thing, too. I think our line just doesn't get the credit. I mean, if you think about our defense, we're a great defense. And I'm not suggesting otherwise. They were. But, you know, in 85, we led the league in rushing, led the league in time possession.
Sure.
Right? Led the league in first downs. We were second in the league in scoring. Right? That makes your defense pretty good. So when you get a lead and you can keep control of the ball and make first downs, make sure that your defense tee off on people. And I think that's why they were so great. Now, they were great to begin with, but when you combine it with giving them the opportunity to tee off on people and pin their ears back, then they're in their element. And it's hard. It's like a big, you know, locomotive going downhill. It's hard to stop.
Well, that's
what I think made us great.
I'll turn it around. I mean, look at it this way. We were just talking about how good you guys were for practicing against the defense. How good were they practicing against a team that led the league in possession time, led the league in first downs, had a great quarterback, had a Hall of Fame top three running back of all time, if you want to make an argument for somebody else. How much did you think that helped that defense? Because I just don't picture that defense, if you played them in a scrimmage, and I'm sure you guys scrimmage plenty, getting their way, for instance, the way they did against the New England Patriots in the Super Bowl.
Oh, no. They didn't have – I mean, the way we practiced is the way we played. And so if you saw how physical those guys were, the defense was, you know, in the games, that's how our practices were. So you learn so much, and it was competitive. I mean – there were times when, you know, when I first got there on Fridays, you would go shoulder pads and sweats, right? Until someone got in a shoving match and someone pushed someone over. Next thing it's live, someone gets a thigh bruise, and then Dick is like full pads. And so for the rest of my career. And so Fridays, you're supposed to be like, you know, short yardage goal line 2 minute, right? That's like Fridays. Then it became like, guys blowing each other off, you know, like guys are getting hurt, people are fighting and everything like that. It was
the Friday.
So they had that.
How about the Friday? Did you have practices on Friday? Because you guys always went out on Thursday. So I could imagine there were some hangovers. There was some crabbiness. Ditka was probably hungover twice a week. So that I happen to, I will bet on that. But did it get tense near the end of the week, especially with games coming up?
Yeah, especially like Green Bay week and stuff like that. When you would see, you know, Thursday night, all the offensive linemen will go out with Mac. I mean, you get in the huddle, and I mean, it smelled like a distillery in the huddle. I mean, the coach would walk in there and said, "Oh my God," you know. I mean, he wouldn't even want to stay in the huddle when they were calling plays and stuff like that. So, and then, you know, got a little hangover, and, you know, someone pushes someone gets hit, and then next thing you know, you got a fight on your hand, a little skirmish, and a couple other guys got to get jacked up, and then next thing you know, three more fights. So, it was very competitive, and I think that's what made us good, because our practices were harder than the games.
You know, I understand. We know the story about you and Mongo, and we know that you took care of him. I've already talked to Mongo about that. He acknowledges that. Who was the guy on that team, though? Because he didn't mess with you. So, you know, you can't say nobody wanted to mess with Jimbo Covert, because somebody did, but he found out later on that wasn't a good idea. Who was the one guy on that team that you said, I don't want no part of it? Was there anybody?
No, I don't think so. But because, you know, I just remember when I came in there as a rookie, you know, I think our defense, you know, when I was a Pitt, the offensive line was like, people looked at us as the tough guys, right?
Sure.
People looked at us as, you know, we kind of were the people to control practice. Mm-hmm. You know, we pushed the defense around. We had good defensive line, don't get me wrong. But it just kind of was that. We were the tough guys known as the
Was
tough
Bill
guys.
Frelick when on got, that team? Was Bill Frelick with you guys?
Yeah, Bill was there for me for 2 years. But I also had Russ Grimm and Mark May, and
sure.
Yeah, so we had some good players, and so we were known like that. And you know, Jackie used to start like practices with, he'd call two guys in the center, and you do one on one, you know, three shots, right? And you'd be going against Hugh Green, Ricky Jackson, you know. I mean, it was pretty good. I mean, and so when I got to the Bears, it just seemed like the defense would try to, you know, muscle guys around, hit guys after plays, do that. I said, they're not going to pull that on me. I mean, I bet I got in a fight probably every practice when I was a rookie, you know, during training camp. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, maybe not a full-blown Mongo fight, but, you know, hitting a guy or jerking his face mask and showing him that, you know, you're not going to play that game with me. So, you know, our offensive line, you know, became better and got the respect that they deserve, because we just had to realize that our defense were, you know, they were kind of like the alpha dogs, but now you got two alpha dogs, and next thing you know, you got a fight, and that's what happened.
You know, in our business, whether it's entertainment, radio, TV, National Football League, we're all entertainers at points. We all feel at times maybe we've gotten more than we deserved, but there's other times we think maybe we've been overlooked. People, I don't care what, if you're a movie actor, you thought you should have won the Oscar. How many times over the past 15 years will you just be laying in bed and just get pissed off that you weren't in the Hall of Fame? And I'm not saying you're going to get in. I think you are, but I thought you should have been in a long time ago. And that's something that gnaws at a competitor. Has that gnawed at you?
You know what, Mike? I'd say a little bit, but I think it got to the point where it's been so long, it just kind of got, you know, every year it just became a disappointment. So I tried not to dwell on it that mm-hmm. much. And then I think when Dan took control of the voting, and, you know, Dan followed my career, sure. and felt like I was, you know, as good as any player that played in the 80s for the Bears. And he felt that. And so then he started to give me a little bit of a push. And I think it started to get maybe some recognition, you know, on the committee. And then, you know, things started to be a little bit positive for me. So, you know, I'm just hoping that, you know, I know he's going to do a great job. I'm just hoping that some of the committee members, you know, realize that, you know, we did some good things there as well. And, you know, Walter was such a great player, but I think we extended his career. And got him to, you know, mm-hmm. got him the record, and then just, you know, and then got him another, you know, couple 3,000 yards after that.
Sure.
And so, I just felt like, you know, our guys just didn't really get the credit. I mean, you know, you don't lead the league in rushing 4 years in a row. I mean, the only other modern era tackle that team has led the league in rushing in the Hall of Fame is Forrest Gregg.
Yeah, but you know why that was? You know why that was? The defense stole the narrative. You know, let's carry Buddy Ryan off, Mike Ditka off. You know, the defense was the deal that every time you think about the 85 Bears, the defense is brought up, and you're right. The offense, you know what? The offense wasn't glitzy. All the offense did was hang on to the ball, and if you want a little lesson on defensive football, all you have to do is go back, folks, to Buddy Ryan, the night he punched the offensive coordinator of the Texans, Kevin Gilbride, saying you were scoring too much and it was making his defense look bad. The defenses in the National Football League that last are the ones that spend the littlest amount of time on the field, whether they get turnovers, Jimbo, or whether they're on a team like you guys where you average 35 minutes a game.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at – I think I played 110 games, started 110 right. games, and I think in the 110 games that I started, we led the other team in time possession in 91 of them.
That's wild.
I mean, I mean, it's incredible. And so it's hard to say that your defense doesn't benefit from that. It just does. And I think you're right. I think the defense sold the narrative, and rightly so. They were a great defense. They did, but that doesn't mean that anybody else, you know, shouldn't have the recognition. And I think our offensive line, and if you look at way, you know, Horn played and Thayer and Becker and Hilge and Bortsi, I mean, we were family and we took pride in what we did. And I think the other thing is, you know, Dick Stanfill, I love him. And, you know, I'm so glad he got in the Hall of Fame, and, you know, he got, Yeah, I wish he was still alive when he would have got in, because I know how much it meant to him.
Sure.
And, you know, he got actually, was a senior guy twice and got voted, you know, didn't get in twice. Mm-hmm. So the third time was a charm for Dick. And so, but, you know, Dick wasn't the kind of guy that would, you know, would toot his horn or toot his horn of the guys that played for him. Right, he wasn't going to go out in the press and say this is the best tackle in the league, or I have the best offensive line in the league. He just wasn't that kind of guy. Where you got other coaches and other teams saying my guy's the best guy in the league, and you know he's better than anybody else, and you know that. I mean, people listen to that, and that's how people make Pro Bowls, and that's how things happen. So you just, you know, it is what it is, and I'm just, you know, I'm proud I played for the Chicago Bears. And you know, my teammates, I got the best teammates in the world. I mean, I think the world of them. And, you know, I could have went anywhere, obviously, in the draft. And when I got to Chicago, we weren't very good. And, you know, I think our 83 draft helped us get to the Super Bowl. And
one of the greatest drafts of all time. One of the greatest drafts ever, folks. Just look back at the 83 draft. By the way, Jimbo, we got Aldo Gandia here. Aldo, I know you got a question or two for Jimbo. Then we got some chat board people. What's on? Here's Aldo. Aldo?
Yeah. First of all, thank you very much, Jim, for being on the show. And we are praying and hoping that you finally get your just due in getting into the hall.
Thank you, Aldo.
A couple of questions. Brummy Bear is listening in live from the UK, and he wants to know, other than Walter Payton, which player on the team kind of inspired you week to week and helped you become the player that you are?
Oh, wow. That's a good question. Well, obviously Walter was Walter. So, I mean, I'd miss him every day and was pretty close with him. And I was very lucky because Matt Tuohy and I were roommates, and you know, Walter was the only one that had a single room, but our room was right next to his. So he was always over in our room anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just felt, I mean, I was just pretty close with him. I mean, he was really the guy. But, you know, I think Jim McMahon was such a positive force for us. And, you know, when he came on the field, you just, when he was playing, you just felt like that someone was going to make a play, right? Someone was going to, you know, someone was going to make a catch or run, something. He just elevated everybody's play because of who he was. And he was such a positive force in the huddle, took command, took control. It was always like, hey, I missed that guy. That was my fault. And he would, you know, say, he would send guys on individual routes. He'd say, Pinky, you do this. Dennis, you do this. And he was so smart that it was very difficult to fool him on coverages, but he just made everybody else better around him.
That is awesome. Now, Johnny Santucci, listening in from Iowa, he's got a question about the modern-day Chicago Bears. He'd like you to evaluate the play of the offensive line in 2019, and in particular, the guy that played left tackle for the team, just like you did, Charles Leno.
I like Charles Leno. I think last year, you know, he had, you know, a couple issues with some, you know, some penalties and some things like that, I think, affected his play and maybe just affected his confidence a little bit. But I sure like Charles Leno. I think he's a great player. I think he's going to be a great player in this league for a long time. You know, he's one of those guys that has great feet and, you know, stands people up at the line of scrimmage. So I like Charles Leno. I was sorry to see Harry go, the line coach, because I think Harry's one of the best line coaches in the league. But, you know, when you have a bad year and things happen like that, you know, that's the NFL, right? So people are going to try to, you know, someone's going to have to take a shot and fall for that, which I hated to see because, in my opinion, there's only so many guys in the league that know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, offensive line coach. And I'm not and there's, what, 32 teams or how many?
Sure.
I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's 32 great offensive line coaches, in my opinion. So I think he's one of them. Because he learned from, he was a student of Joe Moore, who was my line coach at Pitt, who I think is the greatest offensive line coach that ever lived. And, you know, and Russ Grimm and all those guys were,
sure,
such, you know, they were his guys. And so there's not too many of those guys out there. And sad to see him go, but he'll go somewhere because he's such a great coach.
One more from the chat board, and then I'd like to squeeze one in myself.
Sure, go ahead, my friend.
You got it. Do you know anything about the new offensive line coach, Juan Castillo?
I do know a little bit about Juan. He's a great coach. You know, he's been around the league for a long time. He's had some pretty good offensive line. He's coached several Pro Bowlers. You know, I think he'll do a fine job. You know, now they just got to get settled on. You know, they had the one guy playing guard, and they made him a center, and then, right. then Kyle Long being out, and, you know, they were shifting people around. And that's a tough thing with an offensive line. So when you think about it, you know, when you got guys starting the same five guys every week, mm-hmm. I mean, that's why we were so successful.
Yep.
Because, you know, I would say something to Bortsy. I didn't even have to say anything. I just give him a, you know, grunt or say one code word, and he knew exactly what he was going to do. I knew exactly what he was going to do. I knew what Hilgi was going to do, because sometimes Hilgi and I would switch assignments, mm-hmm. and I'd let Hilgi pull out so I could hit that nose guard and keep him honest every once in a while. And Hilgi was, you know, there's not too many centers that could pull, and Hilgi would pull, and was such a great guy to do that. So we were in such sync because of we played so long together. So when you're shuttling guys in and out and bringing a guy from the street and putting him at right guard, hard to do. Yeah. And I think that's why they had some struggles this year.
I hear you. All right, here's my question, and it's a theory, and then I'll ask you the question. You talked earlier with Mike about the offensive line not getting the respect, the offensive line that you played on not getting the respect it deserved. And I totally agree with you. Like mm-hmm. Mike, I've been following the Chicago Bears since the 1960s. Mike, several years more than me, and he started earlier in the decade. I started later in the decade. But I remember when prior to Walter Payton arriving with the Chicago Bears, that the Bears' offensive line was not very good, to be frank. And then those first two or three years that Walter was with the team, the offensive line was getting better, but it still was not at the level it should have been. And so I think my theory is that once the offensive line started to gel and players like yourself came in and the rest of the offensive line started to come together in the early and mid-80s, that people were still holding that perception of the 1970s and early 80s thoughts about the offensive line, and that damaged your reputation and the offensive line's reputation for a number of years. What do you think about my theory?
I think you're right, and I think that and that's happened, and I mean, I don't think there's anybody who can dispute that. I mean, if you're a football fan and you've been around the Chicago Bears for a long time, you'd probably think that way, and that's the way I thought. But, you know, it wasn't just, you know, our run blocking. You know, we led the league in rushing 4 years in a row, like I said, but then we were in the top three. I was, you know, played 8 years, 9 years, and we were there in the top three, and then the other 2 years. So, I mean, when you can do that for an extended period of time with both Walter and with Neil Anderson, I think that makes a huge difference, right?
Yeah.
But also, I mean, it was the pass protection as well. I mean, they had some issues with pass protection as well. And I think our line, you know, I think in 82, you know, there were like, I think we were 26th in sacks allowed or something like that. It was bad. And then a couple years later, you know, only, I think there were only six teams that had, you know, a better sack ratio than us. So we were both pass protecting and we were, you know, running the football. And I think that kind of doesn't get mentioned very much either.
Well, I'll tell you this, and I think I speak on behalf of Aldo. First of all, the 85 team is the most revered single one-season team of all time.
Oh, yeah.
There's no doubt about that. But I think there's more Hall of Famers. I think if you guys would have won that one more Super Bowl, and I think you would have been in a long time ago, Jimbo. Or if you go undefeated in 85, what's your take on that?
Yeah, I mean, you could be right about that, Mike. You know, I just think the thing that worked against me is, you know, my career was shorter, but now they're letting guys in that, you know, that had even shorter careers. I mean, Terrell, you know, Davis and Kenny mm-hmm. Easley. And
sure.
I mean, you know, Tony Baselli's been knocking at the door the last couple of years, and I think I played 20 more games than he did. So, I mean, so I think, you know, that longevity thing is starting to get lessened a little bit. And they're not really taking that into consideration, because I think before it was longevity, you know. And then the other thing is, you know, you guys got guys that got, you know, play 12, 13, 14 years in the league. A lot of those guys didn't start till their third or fourth year. You know what I mean? I mean, I started from the very first day I walked on a practice field in minicamp. So, and started every game my rookie year. So it's a little bit different. So you can say you played 12, 13 years, but you maybe only started 8 of those years, right? You know, nine of those years.
We're going to get, I got one more question, then we're going to let you go, Jim, but we appreciate it. We're rooting for you today. But Aldo and I have talked about this. The Bears can't develop a quarterback worth a damn in my opinion. I think it's well known how many quarterbacks we've gone through. It's my contention they didn't teach McMahon too much. I think McMahon knew coming in. He held 72 records already, just like Danny Marino. To me, I mean, you know it. You were his roommate. I think Danny Marino learned some things in the pros, but I think those two guys had it when they walked into training camp, sort of like you did. What's your take?
No, I agree with you. I think that, you know, Jim McMahon, like I said, smartest guy I ever played with, bar none, smartest guy. I mean, he could do so many things and was mentally so much more prepared. He had a photographic memory, so he didn't have to look at it. You know, he would look at it on film, and, you know, Ed Hughes is like, see that, Jim, you got it? I got it. Jim, I got it. You know, I mean, he didn't need that. You know, had his physical skills weren't like Dan Marino's, but he made up for it a lot because he had, you know, the ability to read defenses. And Jim wasn't a big guy, and that was the other thing. You know, Danny's 6'4", you know, 240. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jim's – I bet you my rookie year he didn't weigh 185 pounds, 190 pounds. So he's not the biggest guy in the world. And, you know, that's hard, too, when you're trying to run around and scramble and get hit by a 280-pound defensive lineman. You're not going to stay healthy very much.
Well, I'll tell you what, buddy. We're all rooting for you. You know, everybody here in Chicago's excited. I think it's going to happen for you. Finally, and with the 45 minutes, we just spent 40 minutes ago. It's like the old days. It just went quickly. Jimbo, on behalf of everybody at the bar room and Aldo, we wish you nothing but the best, bud.
Thank you, guys. I really appreciate you having me on, and let's keep our fingers crossed.
You got it.
You got it, buddy. Take care.
We'll see you. Bye-bye. Thanks.
Yeah, bye-bye. Bye.
Wow
is right.
I've been to Jimbo over just rolling about everything.
That was unbelievable. What? First of all, what a great human being. You know, that guy is just the epitome of class. And people in the chat room were like, yeah, this guy's great. This guy's great. And then when he started saying all those nice things about Charles Leno, he was, well, okay, now he's not being so great. He's being politically correct.
Well, he might be, but I think what he was saying, he's got all the parameters down, the quick feet and everything else.
You're absolutely right.
But Jimbo Colbert knew how to play. And this is what he's talking about with Joe Moore. Can you imagine in college an offensive line of Russ Grimm, Mark May, and Jimbo Colbert on the same team? That's your offensive line coach, Joe Moore.
Yeah.
And I agree with him on his stand. I know that. He didn't sugarcoat that.
Right.
I believe he thinks that wasn't a good firing, Aldo, but just a terrific guy. I'll be crushed if he doesn't get in. I know he will too. But I think he's going to get in, and you got guys like Marino and Richard Dent prepping for you and Mike Ditka. So excited about that. But we thank Jimbo Colbert for that. I mean, and you know what? He's a Bear fan still. He watched the games. You asked him about Leno. He knew everything about him, Aldo.
Sure
you
did.
Know? So, you know, the bottom line is that we appreciate – you know, it's funny. Hawk Harrelson got a hold of me. Jimbo got a hold of me. Hey, you know what? The Hall of Fame votes this week. Can you get the bear? Get retweet me on the bar room. I go, of course, because Jimbo's always been sort of shy, Aldo, about that stuff.
Yeah,
he was never a barker. You know, like right. Look at me. And I think that's cost him, don't you?
Absolutely. You've got to toot your own horn. You know the old expression, it's the squeaky hinge that gets oiled, and he needs to squeak a little louder, and we're going to help him do that with all of our platforms here at Bears Barroom. We're going to tweet out this audio. We're going to select sections from it and tweet it out so that people can listen to portions of the interview if they can't catch the entire show. But I gotta tell you, you asked, and I'm not kissing your ass here, Mike. You asked some great questions, and maybe the best one that you asked was the one about quarterback development with the Chicago Bears. They just have never been able to do that as a franchise. The few, you know, great quarterbacks they've had, and maybe I should say a couple of great quarterbacks they've had, have been guys that have come into the team already possessing the knowledge of how to play the position. They've never had luck in developing their own QB.
Think about this. Jim Harbaugh, his dad's the coach, was a coach.
Mm-hmm.
So he taught Jimmy how to play the position before Jimmy even got to the Bears.
Right.
He knew how to play quarterback at Michigan. McMahon. We were right. Jimbo just said it. Smartest guy he's ever saw. You think the Bears showed him anything? He even said, Ed Hughes would tell him something. He'd go, you told me once already. He probably knew it already. So I'm with you on that. Hey, by the way, you know what time it is?
Is it that time already?
Wait, are we what? Yeah! Yes, baby. We got three games. We lost the Southern game the other night. Shame on me. It was supposed to go. It didn't go the right way. The total was wrong. I thought it would go. The under went over. We are 32-24. I got three games to give away for all you patient people out there. We hope you enjoyed the interview. We hope all, and we were happy that we got the chat board to talk about it too. And the first thing I got to do though is take care of our sponsor, Vegas Scores and Odds, VSAO Sports. Follow these guys. Enjoy it. Don't forget about our podcast. Check out VSA Sports and VegasScoresAndOdds.com. Right now, I'm on a winning streak. I've won 8 out of my last 10 games. I'm on fire in the NBA, doing good in college basketball. I'll be honest with you. College football this year, I was 12-16. Last year, I was 18-10. So things change, folks. But you know what? You're playing every day. You're having a good time. So check it out on Vegas Scores and Odds. Now, let's go to the odds tonight. First of all, with the Indiana playing Northwestern game tonight, the over-under in that game is 146. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know if the Chris Collins thing is ever going to work. If you've noticed, I thought Northwestern basketball would be like Duke by now.
Yeah.
I think this, right, Aldo? Yeah. I think this hiring has just been an okay hiring.
Yeah.
There's been no smoke. I mean, really, when it comes to the Northwestern Wildcats, I thought that we were going to hear more about them. Right now, they are a 5-8 team. I mean, come on. The Chris Collins thing ain't working out, folks. Indiana's 11-3. And you notice a lot of the writers in Chicago are just leaving Chris Collins alone. There's a lot of writers that went to Northwestern. I don't know if that's the reason, like guys that work for the Tribune or the Sun-Times. And there's no talk about right now. It looks to me, Aldo, that like Chris Collins is falling on his face. What's your take?
I am totally with you. I was just looking up when he joined Northwestern, how many years ago that was. I'm calling it up right now.
I think it was like 3-4 years ago. I know they played 1 year at the Allstate Arena because they had to refurbish. Look, Jim Phillips has done some wonderful things. I had suggested back in the day to him, Jim Less, who's coaching now out in Cal.
I was thinking the same thing. Absolutely. You know, and Collins has been coaching at Northwestern since 2013. So he's been there quite a while, and I'm with you. I would have thought that by now, maybe, you know, not a powerhouse, but certainly a year-to-year contender in the Big Ten Conference, and that just hasn't happened. I mean, they've been below 500 every year in the Big Ten, and that just isn't going to cut it. It should change by now.
Yeah. You know what? And we're the first ones, I think, to even bring it up. I mean, my God, you want to talk about treating somebody with a velvet glove. And I like Chris Collins, but I mean, my God, it was supposed to be, you know, right now, this was not the plan, folks. So anyway, I'll take the over tonight in the Northwestern game, 139.5. The over in the Northwestern game, 139.5. Now, we have the North Carolina Tar Heels. They're playing tonight. Now, I saw where, and I'm going to look for it right now on my sheet here. I saw where Roy Williams took his team on.
We're not a very gifted team. And boy, the way he said it on a radio show, it just sounded like he was blaming them and not taking any accountability for his coaching. I thought it was very strange.
Very good point here. -4.5 is UNC. I think that that team will take it to heart. I think UNC wins the game by 10. So take UNC minus 4.5. After, you know what, I do know this. If somebody embarrasses me in public, if somebody says, boy, that Mike North on the radio, he doesn't sound all that good. Never heard that before. But no, seriously, every other fax back in the day that disagreed with me. Like that's how far back I go, faxing. But you know what? All kidding aside, if somebody fires on you or a group of you guys, whatever you do, whether it's, you know, I didn't think that play was that good. You know, people wake up the next day, they're in plays on Broadway and read the critics, you know, and then they walk around bummed out for the next 8 months. I think that this team will respond. I like UNC minus the 4.5. I like over Northwestern tonight in their game also. And then I got one more for everybody because it is basketball season. Duquesne is minus 8. Duquesne against St. Joe's. Take Duquesne minus 8. So I have Duquesne minus 8, UNC minus 4.5, and over Indiana Northwestern 139. Aldo, back to you, my friend.
Thank you very much, and I want to make a correction on something that I said. Northwestern did have one season where they were over 500. That was
Got to be better, though. You're right.
Yeah, they were 10-8 in the 2016-17 season, but overall in the Big Ten, Chris Collins' record as a head coach, 40-71. That is not good. I am sorry.
Wow, that's brutal. I you know what? People don't even realize that because you know, the newspapers that are stocked with Big Ten graduates and Northwestern, you know the people, they don't want to write about it.
Yep, they don't. You're absolutely right.
How many people know that he's 30 under 500?
I didn't know it until I just looked at it. I knew it wasn't good, but that is horrible. My goodness.
They treat him like a velvet glove. Jim Phillips made a mistake. And last year, they made a mistake recruiting with Matt Mooney.
Yep.
And they waited too long to try to get him.
Yep.
And he already went to Texas Tech. You know the story.
Yep, absolutely.
Matt's been on with us. He told us. They basically fumbled the ball.
Right. Right. Yep. Hey, I want to challenge our listeners who are always very, very grateful. I get messages saying, hey, how can we help Bears Barroom? How can we help you guys? I got something that you can help with. We are 9 followers short of 700 on the Vegas Scores and Odds account on Twitter. I want to, in the next 48 hours, let's get over 700. So if you are not following at VSAO Sports, I want you to follow them as soon as you stop listening to this or while you're listening to this, give them a follow, retweet what they have put up, share it with people because they're a great sponsor of ours and we want to make sure that they grow along with us. So yeah.
We started at 485, so we've done tremendous strides.
That is awesome. It's been a good,
yeah. So, I mean, they basically didn't pay attention to the Twitter for years because that's not what they do.
Right.
And but it's about branding and that's like Bear Barroom. It's like AM 1000 or anything else. And that's no different with Vegas Scores and Odds. So hopefully Dan Pompey is going to put – I'm glad that Danny's been pushing the envelope.
Yes.
For Jimbo Colbert because I know I've been hearing like Olin Krutz.
Mm-hmm.
He deserves – and Lance Briggs. People want these guys in, but I think you got to get Jimbo Colbert in before you get anybody.
I am totally with you. And Pompey did a fabulous job of making the case for Brian Urlacher. He was so successful at that Urlacher went out of his way to thank Dan. A lot of people thought that Urlacher was going to get in, but not as a first ballot Hall of Famer. And that, I think, happened because of Pompey. And so if Pompey...
He's got some strength, Danny boy.
He does. Isn't he a neighbor of yours or was a neighbor of yours?
He was when we lived in Park Ridge. Yeah, we lived on the same... I mean, he lived on a couple blocks down, a same street, blocks down. But yeah, I mean, definitely. And I've known Danny for a long time, and he's really, I mean, you know what? He's consistent, and yes. Yeah, if you want to read his stuff, he's on The Athletic.
Yes. All right, before we get out of here, just couple quick mentions about what's happening with the NFL playoffs. I wanted to kind of focus in on the NFC North teams that are playing.
Sure.
You know, we've got the Seahawks at Packers. Matt LaFleur and Pete Carroll met with the media. I've got back-to-back sound bites here. I got LaFleur talking about his respect for the Seahawks and Pete Carroll talking about how tough it is to go to Lambeau Field. This is LaFleur first.
Tough team. You just look at they've been extremely tough on the road as well. And we're just kind of digging into the early stages of the prep, but It's going to be a great challenge.
And this is Pete Carroll, the Seahawks.
You know, there's no tougher place to play than going to Green Bay. And so that we're as ready as you can get. And I like that. And our guys feel good about that, too. And so we're going to try to make the most of it.
Mike, the Packers are giving 4 points in this game. The over-under is 47. I know this is one of your premium packages over at Vegas Scores and Odds, but kind of give us a feeling, give us your take on your feel for this game.
I may pick it on the odds couple. It was just too early on Wednesdays. And you know what? I'd rather get us some winners tonight with the NCAA because I've been on fire. But I will tell you this, off the top of my head, I know they can't run the football right now, Seattle, but they have as good a quarterback. I said last year, maybe they changed their mind this year, but I said last year, I don't think Green Bay Packer fans would mind trading Aaron Rodgers for Russell Wilson. I think it the other way around. I think Seattle loves Russell Wilson. But Aaron Rodgers has proven himself once again, I mean, with 13 wins. That being said, -4, they're coming a long way to play at Green Bay. Off the top of my head, if I had to lean right now and make a pick, I'd pick Seattle. I'd pick Seattle because I just think that Russell Wilson, he's been there. Rodgers has been there. I don't think it's a big enough spread. It could be a field goal game. That's the way I look at it right now, but I may change my mind by the time I handicap it.
And so I encourage everybody to listen to Mike on ESPN 1000's The Odds Couple, 6 p.m. on Fridays. There is a replay Saturday mornings. And the
Carmen's on fire. He doesn't lose anymore, you know. he won the other day. I mean, seriously, he's doing well. I mean, I picked, like this year, I picked 63 games. He only picked 30 because he went on vacation a couple times, plus he picks less games. It don't matter. He picked like at a 60% clip. If anything, I was like three games above 500, so we ended up being 56%. The one thing I will tell you is that AM 1000 has been an offshoot of what we've done from Bears Barroom, and it's going to continue to get better. We have a winning record there too, just like we do here at Bears Barroom. I may have a different take on Friday night with the Green Bay game, but right now I'd lean Seattle.
Excellent. All right. And then I wanted to quickly touch on that Vikings at 49ers game. I've got back-to-back sound bites here. The first one is from Mike Zimmer talking about whether he has an advantage in preparing his defense for the 49ers offense because there's some similarities with the offenses. And then that's followed by Jimmy Garoppolo. He was asked to scout the Vikings defense. Here first is Coach Zimmer.
Some of the things are similar, but, you know, they all have their own wrinkles, but hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, he didn't want to offer much more than that, but some
similarities. What a talkative young man.
Yes, exactly. But the similarities, I think, will definitely help the Vikings defense on that. And this is Garoppolo talking about that Vikings defense.
They're a talented group defensively, very sound. You know, Coach Zimmer does a great job getting them in great plays, and they make it tough on offenses, so. That D-line, they're impressive. They'll get after you, and so it'll be a good test for us.
Hey, Mike, I got one more. Garoppolo talking. You and I are huge fans of George Kittle, the tight end for the San Francisco, and this Garoppolo talking about how, you know, the Vikings are really good at guarding tight ends, and this is what he said about the Vikings' defense against tight ends.
They have talented safeties, talented linebackers who are the guys covering them. And they do good in man-to-man situations, so it'll be tough on us to get those completions.
Yeah, Mike, you know, the over-under on this game is 44. I got a gut feel that it's going to come in under because of the familiarity of the offenses and the fact that the biggest weapon the 49ers have, George Kittle, might be stifled by that Vikings defense. Any thoughts?
Yeah, I got a thought. I just saw it's -7.
Mm-hmm.
Last week, the Vikings were getting 8. And, you know, now 49ers are giving them 7. Off the top of my head, I think the 49ers win the football game like 24-10. I just see a wild card team playing against a team. But, see, once I start handicapping, I may think otherwise. This is how I used to pick my games years ago, okay? And that's why I would continue to lose. This is how most people pick their games. Not me, but off the top of my head, as a guy that's just looking at it,
mm-hmm.
The 49ers are tough, and their defense is just as good as Minnesota's.
Oh, my goodness,
so,
yes.
And Kittle, who has stopped him this year, really?
Yeah, nobody.
He's a beast.
Yeah, he really
He's
is.
A beast, and we knew this. You know, that's why, see, if he lost Kittle, they might lose, just like Brady lost without Gronkowski. That's how dominant those two guys are. And by the way, Jimbo thinks the defensive backs are the best athletes. I think tight ends who can block and also run like 15, 20-yard pass patterns are great athletes,
too. Yeah, I'm with you there. I mean, particularly in today's NFL, there are
Look at Gronk and Kittles. Who's better than those two guys?
Yeah, phenomenal athletes at that tight end position. You have got that right. All right, I want to do something special with our closing music today, and you inspired it, Mike, because I saw you tweet out that today is the birthday of a special guy.
Can I just say something?
Please.
In 1964, I went to see Girl Happy at the Uptown Theater.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, I mean, with a Shelley Fabrese, if you will.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody had better look at Anne Margaret, Yvonne Craig. Ooh. I can name them all. I mean, Elvis was Dolores Hart. I mean, the guy never made a money-losing movie. He could have made better movies. He was supposed to be in A Star Is Born, but Streisand wanted top billing. The Colonel said, that ain't ever going to happen. Mm. You're not as big as Elvis, and that's been proven right over the span of time. But yeah, 19, I mean, when he died, I was legitimately like I lost a family member. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was a tough day. It really was.
Oh, my gosh. My brother is a phenomenally huge Elvis fan, and he still...
I saw him in 77. The one I looked in through the binoculars, first thing I said is, maybe drop the fork. You know what I mean? I saw him in the stadium, but the guy did an hour, walked off, and we never saw him again.
That's right. Elvis has left the building.
and he left the planet.
All right, let's close with a little bit of Elvis. Mike, yeah, I love you. Great show.
Love you too, man.
All righty.
Oh yeah.
Warden threw a party in the county jail. The prison band was there, they began to wail. And the joint began to swing. You should have heard this knocked out jailbird sing that.